For most of human history, human life was nasty, brutish, and short. Today, life expectancy has vastly improved, though. There is only one thing we can't escape dying from, that one inescapable disease, aging. What is a human lifespan? 100 years? 120 years? Is there any reason why we can't function biologically and mentally for 200 years? This is a culture and policy question we will be exploring all week. Want to live to 200? What worries you about our society if everyone could? Tell us the story of how you most want to age. Genomic and synthetic life scientist J. Craig Venter says aging is a phenomenon we can control and arrest through genomic science. He believes that by aggressively accelerating the mapping of human genes, we can better understand and prevent the consequences of human aging. Craig Venter's new project with private funding and an association with the University of California, San Diego, is called Human Longevity.
Age is the number one risk factor for every disease, but it's not treated as a disease on its own. We're trying to use layers of information that have never been put together, so starting with the entire human genome, layering in the genetic code of the microbes, we'll be measuring the proteins, we'll be measuring the chemicals, we'll be doing tests that people won't necessarily be able to get anywhere else, and combining that all together. We're trying to get the whole picture and create a database that can actually become really predictive of what's associated with disease, what's associated with health, really trying to put the puzzle together to understand what's predictive, what's not.
And I want to talk about the science in just a moment, but just staying on the sort of philosophical question of, what it means to have a 150-year lifespan or a 200-year lifespan or a non-aging lifespan where you're not concerned after you turn 60 about the kinds of things that I think obsess most people, certainly in the developed world, about when their demise is and what it might consist of. What do you think humans would do with that huge amount of space to think free of the idea that there's this sword of Damocles hanging over their heads, that their body's going to break down and then that's what the next 20 years are going to be like?
Well, that's probably not going to change anytime soon. But, if we live longer and we're healthier, we can have more productive lives. And we can solve all the economic problems by simply changing the retirement age to age 75 and still have another 20 or 30 years of healthy life after that.
Why do you think that solves the economic problems rather than tripling the unemployment rate?
Well, because in fact, what we do is we have people that pay in for their, quote, normal careers, and now they're living much longer, withdrawing from the system that was never intended to do that. People have a chance to be productive longer, which is good for them and good for society. Retirement generally isn't good for anybody.
So socially, we weren't prepared for the advances in healthcare that have led to the longevity we're already experiencing.
That's correct.
And being ready for an additional, bonus is certainly hard to imagine.
Well, even if we can live all to what's being predicted into our 90s, my mother's turning 91 this year.
Congratulations.
Mentally, totally intact, but her body's starting to wind down, getting frail. Sarcopenia, you lose your muscle mass or you lose your muscle tone. There's ways we think in the future to change that and at least keep people more active for a longer period of time. So, we're not trying to push to get 150 or 200 as a lifespan. We have a lot of other problems on the planet that we have to solve, but healthcare is now the single most expensive rising thing in our economy. That if we go to a preventative medicine paradigm, if we try to prevent diseases instead of waiting to treat them in end stages after they occur, we can lower the healthcare budget. We can have people live a healthier life. For example, Bert Wolgastein, one of the top cancer researchers in the world, has recently talked about how colon cancer is a 30-year disease. And over the first 27 years, if it's treated there, it can be successfully treated. The last 3 years is when it starts to metastasize and gets to be very difficult to treat.
Does your science, your sort of genetic database kind of big data approach allow for distinguishing between positives and false positives in our ability to image? And we can see a lot of things, but we can't necessarily determine its predictive quality at the state of the science right now.
Yeah. Imaging is getting much better and becoming quantitative, and that's going to be an important part of what we're doing. But let me give you an example. My genome's been on the internet now for 14 years. It's well known that I'm heterozygote for APOE4, which gives me an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. I recently underwent the brain scans looking for amyloid in my brain, and there was none. So there appears to be this dichotomy between an increased genetic risk and the actuality, and the same is true for breast cancer, every kind of disease you can imagine. And so I obviously have in my genome protective alleles that are keeping me from getting Alzheimer's disease.
And that's what you need to find.
That's what we're going to be looking for, is the protective part of the genome.
Do you think in this particular initiative the government will jump aboard? And in the regulatory sphere, do you think they'll deliver the proper sort of regulatory environment for your kind of investigation to flourish?
With the FDA, we've already beginning a dialogue with them. I think the FDA is critical for this. Regulating tests, I think, is an important thing because there's so many different kinds of tests out there that aren't very meaningful. You know, is the quality of the information you're being given, does it mean anything? Can you do anything with it? And if you're trying to decide to have your breast removed, are you making that decision based on reliable data? This has to work very broadly for the healthcare industry. It has to be financially viable. It has to actually be truly actionable, reduce the cost of medicine if it's going to be highly successful. That can't be done driven by the government.
So finally, Mr. Venter, there are a lot of people who are going to be listening to this. And you've already said, you know, it's a misnomer that you're trying to live forever. And it's a misnomer that this is about immortality. It's about longevity. It's about creating a genomic-based healthcare strategy. Nevertheless, you know, there's a notion out there of people are successful enough. There's a kind of Charles Foster Kane effect that, okay, you make your first billion, the first thing you want to do is like chop off your head and, you know, freeze it so that when, you know, the technology is available, you can live forever, whatever sorts of suggestions. Google's got a live forever initiative going on. Who's to say that the therapies that you're talking about will only be available for people at the very, very highest level of the income level? And for everyone else, this is really going to be a pipe dream.
Right. It's a very fair question. 14 years ago, it cost $100 billion to sequence my genome. Now it's down to $1,000. I think the next decade's going to see it down to $100 or less. It cost almost $1,000 just to get a single gene test for breast cancer right now. So I think it's part of the picture of what does public health cover. I think if we make the case that having your genome sequenced and having this other information can actually help your health outcome, can lower the cost of health care by getting to a preventative medicine, then it will be broadly available.
J. Craig Venter, genomic and synthetic life scientist, co-founder of Human Longevity Incorporated, and I gather a Mother's Day present for your 90-year-old mom that would reduce her aging. That would be a pretty darn good Mother's Day present.
Yeah, she asked me to hurry up.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.